This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. I'm working today on the use of story in otherwise sciencey bits of research.
Beautiful.
Prompted by Kylie's work, who you have met, looking at the mixing together Mataranga Māori and science, and particularly with
Kylie
water management.
Fonterra.
That's the one.
Oh, her work is going to be beautiful. I actually cannot wait to see that done, and I look forward to, I have a monthly meeting with her, and I look forward to that.
Indeed, she's very engaging.
She is.
We need to get her on the show, but we have got a lot of coming up for air episodes to get through first.
Indeed we do, and so on the subject of coming up for air, it is my great pleasure to introduce the very lovely Hannah Remen. Welcome, Hannah. It's so nice to be so lovely to have you here with us today.
Thank you. Hi.
Kia ora, Hannah. Where did you grow up, Hannah?
I grew up in two countries, mainly Norway, and I also grew up a bit in Melbourne, in Australia. So my accent's a bit funny. Yeah.
That's all right. What was it like in Norway?
Oh, it's kind of similar to the South Island, actually. very beautiful, very lots of nature, lots of forest. So, yeah, had a very, like, outdoorsy childhood, just running around and just so much area to explore, really. It's very peaceful. I love it. So, miss it dearly.
You wouldn't describe Melbourne as very peaceful.
No, Melbourne's, like, the complete opposite of Norway, I would say. But you can get out of Melbourne and it's nice and you have the beaches, but definitely way more busy. But yeah, definitely mainly lived in Norway, but had a couple of years here and there in Australia. So usually the summers are very hot compared to Norway. We don't really get warmth really. So yeah.
And what did you want to be when you grew up?
I think I wanted to be a soccer player, but that didn't turn out very well. Yeah, I think that's probably what I want to be. Very just like basic, just like wanting to play soccer. I didn't think very far ahead, I think, at the time. So, yeah, doing something very different now, which is funny. But, yeah, that did not turn out to happen.
So, not playing football, what did you do instead?
Well, instead I'm now doing a degree in sustainable business. So, hopefully going to go out and do sustainability stuff. So, not fully related to soccer, to be honest. But, yeah.
What was your undergrad on?
So I did politics and international relations and Asian studies at the University of Sydney. So I've lived a couple of years in Sydney as well. So yeah, that was my undergrad. So I have a bit more like, I have a lot of experience with like kind of like NGO kind of stuff. Yeah.
And what got you from there to a master's in sustainable business?
Well, this is going to be a bit pessimistic, but I found that with the politics degree I took, I found that it was really difficult to have an impact through that degree, I felt. It's highly competitive to get any type of work in the NGO space, and I didn't really want to do politics as in like political parties and stuff like that. And so I felt that the only way for me to be able to have an impact was through like a bottom-up approach. So that's kind of where that led me. And I was like, okay, sustainable business, and I can go in and change these businesses because they actually do have a lot of power. Some have actually more power than like countries. And so I thought that was a cool way of doing it that felt more realistic for what I want to achieve.
What's been the biggest insight so far?
Oh, that's difficult. I think there's just a lot. I think what I've really appreciated about it is that I've learned to kind of name a lot of things that's happening around me. So it's more of like having an understanding of like there are ways to approach things through like theory, obviously, but it feels very practical as well. So like being able to apply ways of thinking to things that are happening around, if that makes sense. So I had already done some work with systems thinking, but in the peace area. And then coming in here and doing systems thinking when it comes to sustainability and like business was pretty cool. So I think that's probably my main takeaway. And also I love action research. So that was also really fun. Definitely happy to be doing that now moving forward.
Is it possible to do systems thinking and complexity and so on in a business that relies so much on a very short-term single measure of profit this quarter?
Yeah, I find that really hard. I do think it is a bit difficult to, because I feel like with systems thinking, it requires a societal change for it to kind of work. And so with businesses that are just about profit maximization, short-term profit maximization, I do think it actually is a really big challenge. I'm not sure if it's the correct approach to handling that, but I do find it just more in terms of like, I think it's just more, for me, it's more about understanding complex problems. So maybe not within the business as much, but maybe towards like how the business operates in relation to other like systems in our like society. That's where I feel like it's more applicable, if that makes sense.
Maybe there's a business opportunity in figuring that out, in figuring out how businesses could do complexity.
Yeah, no, for sure. But yeah, I just do think it is. It's definitely an area that's really interesting, but I do find it really obviously complex. So it is very difficult to like even think about in the sense of like, I think it just depends a lot on context as well, like and also on the business.
Let's take the first of your music choices. Let's have Nick Calra, Rooting For You. Why this one?
So Nick's my mate here in Dunedin. He's from America. He's on exchange and he just released that song. It's kind of ironic because he's like a really hyper, like excited person. And this song is really sleepy. So I thought it would be funny to like put this song in. But it's actually a really good song and I just love him as a person. He's so fun. So yeah.
Playing friends and family's music is the best reason for having music.
I agree.
Said you don't like the way the clothes are on my bed. You said you don't like the way I say the things that I say. Believe it or not, I'm changing, and secretly I've been praying. And one of these days I'll make I say, girl, I'm rooting for you to win every race. You know I'm rooting for you. And girl, I'm sorry for the words that I say. No, I'm sorry for you. I know how hard you're on your face. While we're driving to new places, love. I know I'm not the boy in bed that April day. Girl, I'm rooting for you to win every race. No, I'm rooting for you. Girl, I'm rooting for you. No, I'm rooting for you.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi aroha nui kia koutou ko tahua hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are, and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are. A triumph of nature's art. Perfect. Unique. And here, making things better. Thank you. Now I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough. And we've had to draw upon the absolute depths of our inner reserves in order to survive. And in order to navigate in quite a new reality that we find ourselves in now. So it's so important that we give ourselves and each other the opportunity to rest, to recover, to recalibrate, and we treat one another with care, compassion, and kindness at all times. Particularly with ourselves, you know, we've all had to adapt, we've all had to change. And some of the things that we were able to do before, or some of the ways that we went about doing things before, have had to shift and change also. In my own personal recovery journey, I have the long COVID, the post-viral fatigue. So in learning to navigate this and rest a lot more and enjoy resting a lot more and balancing my energy, tempering my desire to do everything and experience everything with the understanding that this has to be a more gradual process is a great skill to learn. And here I am, 38 years old, just really starting to enjoy establishing and maintaining a routine. This is the first time in my life I have moved through the world in this way, with a structure, with a routine, and it has helped me immensely. So I really hope for you, in this new way that we are all sharing this path, you're finding ways to care for yourself and sustain, maintain, perhaps even grow your energy reserves, and you are enjoying this process of new means of self-care. I know for myself, making sure that I put my feet in the sea every day was immensely helpful. Making sure I drink lots of water throughout the day, making sure I get as much rest and good food, all that sort of thing, is immensely helpful. And making sure I have time with people who I really love spending time with is very important also. Beautiful music, the beauty of the living world, the beauty of the written word, the beauty of the spoken word, all all these things really, really help me to survive the daily world. And of course, as I speak to you now, I am driving out on probably my favourite road, which is the Otago Peninsula Road. It takes us past these stunning volcanic cliffs alongside the volcanic crater that is the harbour. And such texture, such vivacity, all the colours, and beautiful boat sheds, beautiful boats, beautiful sea creatures, beautiful marine mammals, all of these beautiful seabirds, all of these life forms greeting us at this point where the sea meets the land. And of course, as a species, we are drawn to these spaces of change and transition. And as a species, we would not have survived if we were not capable of making a home, making a successful home in these places of change and transition. And so part of our journey now, as we move beyond this global pandemic into recovery mode, of course, is to draw upon those great stores of ancestral knowledge and expertise. So I really hope for you, wherever you're up to in your recovery journey, you are enjoying time and space for yourself and the capacity to draw strength and inspiration from the world around you. And of course, being part of this show is a wonderful privilege and pleasure for me. So a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. And I'll talk with you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
And if we're going to listen to your podcast soon, what would you like to tell us about the person that you have interviewed?
So I used to work for a think tank called the Institute for Economics and Peace. So we publish the Global Peace Index, if you've heard about that. And so we just measure basically how peaceful countries are worldwide, and we do a lot of peace building as well. And so I was in the partnerships department, and my boss was Patricia Garcia, who is the person I'm interviewing. And so she's a human rights advocate and has done lots of interesting peace building work in lots of cool countries. So she's also worked with Oxfam and the UN, and she's just a really interesting person to get to know, and to have her as a mentor has been amazing. So I just really want to interview her and see her perspective on sustainability, because she also is an advocate for the Sustainable Development Goals. That's kind of the context of my interview.
That's so good. And is there anything in particular that you want our listeners to listen out for?
Well, I think this whole episode, my podcast is a lot targeted at people my age, so youth, and how we can approach these big problems with climate change. And so I think for anyone that is in their 20s, I would just recommend them listening to it, because it is really relevant for us. And it is kind of I found it to be I felt much more positive after I did the interview with her. So if you're ever a bit oh my God, I'm so overwhelmed by all this talk about climate change and the future, I think this is the perfect episode for you.
I'm really lucky today to be able to interview one of my role models, Patricia Garcia. Patricia is a highly respected humanitarian and human rights advocate with a remarkable career dedicated to helping people in conflict. Her work has taken her to some of the most conflict-affected regions in the world, including Afghanistan, Bosnia, Kosovo, Rwanda. Patricia's primary focus has been on assisting refugee women and children, providing them with support in some of the most challenging circumstances. I first got to know Patricia through my internship at the Institute for Economics and Peace, a think tank dedicated to understanding how peace and prosperity are interconnected. She served as the National SDG Program Manager for the United Nations Association of Australia, where she played a crucial role in advancing the SDG global agenda. Patricia's extensive experience includes working with prestigious organisations such as the United Nations, Oxfam, Norwegian Church Aid, UNHCR and UNOPS, to name a few. Her contributions to the humanitarian sector has been widely recognised, including receiving an Australian Federal Government Award in 2011 and being appointed as an Officer of the Order of Australia in 2016. That same year, she also was a state finalist of Australian of the Year. I'm really excited and honoured to have Patricia talking with me today, and I'm thrilled to hear her experiences, insights and perspectives on issues related to sustainability and how it can be connected to peace. So without further ado, let's welcome Patricia.
We now have the highest number of countries that have conflicts ever since World War II. And the situation is not going to deteriorate. In other words, there's not going to be less countries. If anything, we're seeing that sliding wall because the peacefulness around the world globally has deteriorated every year for the last 15 years. And it's not going to be going up. And particularly now with the number of conflicts we've got now, in a number of countries with conflicts now going up and up and up. And so the scenario is not, it's almost like we've got to really come to an alarm sort of bell to say, look, if we do not focus on how we can actually stop these conflicts and also the causes of them,
yeah,
we've got to look at all these other areas as what we're talking about, which is in relation to the Sustainable Development Goals. It is about people, it is about the planet, it is about prosperity, and we need to be looking at all those other areas. And for that reason, one of the key factors that we look at all these countries, particularly the countries with a conflict, is the huge numbers of youth. In fact, yeah, most of the countries that are experiencing a conflict, the majority of the population are youth. And that's the worry that people have, because if the youth population is just, it's currently 1.2 billion of the world's population, which is 16%, this is 15 to 24 years of age. If that keeps exploding, for me, thinking of the sustainable business thinking, is we have to offer young people jobs, work, and build their skills, education and training so that they're really able to be able to have a future for themselves. If we're going to just keep having people coming and then they're going up in conflicts, you only have to look at pictures of conflicts now. What you see, young people, mostly young men, with guns. They've got nothing else. They're not doing anything else. And that's the scary situation. Think of it that way from the lens of looking at conflict and security. And I think that's one of the things that we sort of feel that if we do not start focusing on that area of how we can build up opportunities, and this is where the sustainable business model can come in, because we need the innovation, creativity, entrepreneurship of young people to get into the new type of jobs.
It is also interesting to think about conflict and like the generational trauma that is related to conflict, but also because of we've inherited all this kind of burden on us and our shoulders, and we're kind of all a bit lost about what to do with it, because it just seems a bit really grim and dim future for us. So do you know what I mean? It's just like, I find it really interesting to be like, okay, I'm thinking of sustainability in terms of climate change, but then at the same time, I'm thinking, oh, wow, like how many of us are going to go into a company and we're going to be part of a greenwashing situation? Yeah. Or how many of us are going into sustainability and we're going to lose our jobs because, you know, just degrowth in general is going to make us not valuable assets anymore to a company? I don't know if you have any thoughts on that and like how to look a bit more positive towards the future, because it is a bit grim at the moment.
I think one example that is definitely taking off a lot, particularly for young people, is working in the blue economy.
Okay.
That's one area that I think, and it's got potential for people like us living in Oceania region. We're surrounded by the blue economy. And that's one of the actual areas where there is huge amount of creativity, innovation for young people to get involved in the whole blue economy area. And that's everything from, you know, maritime waste to fisheries to tourism to offshore energy. There's a whole lot of stuff in the blue economy. It's huge. I'm a great fan of the SDG 14, which is, you know, protecting our marine and ocean sources. And because I was quite passionate about that particular goal when I started with advocating for the SDGs, because I swim every day. I'm next to a beach, and that's been my, if you like, my connection to my nature, my life. And it's already form of my own life view of what keeps me feeling resilient and strong, that I see the benefit of having an ocean and all the benefits it brings to all of us in the community. But we also have to be able to show how we can protect it. And that's one of the things that I think the youth have a huge amount of ideas of how to be able to be involved in the blue economy and also develop entrepreneurship in this area. But what we've got to do is we've got to invest in education and training. And it's being able to, for example, the young people coming up with ideas, then they educate the young people on new ideas. And that's where I'm talking about how you can create businesses that can be able to be sustainable to support the young and next generation on how to protect our blue economy and to thrive on and to expand our blue economy. I'm only thinking of one type of economy that young people can thrive in and flourish in. For me, it's more about, how can we say, a lot of people are saying that, yes, we have to look at mitigation for climate change. But at the same time, if you want to take climate action seriously, we have to also address current situations, which is all about adaptation. There's no point looking at getting rid of fossil fuels when people can't even get electricity to charge their mobile. Do you see what I mean? There's a problem here. So we have to get to look at also how can people adapt now with what's not being able to be done, because for many people, they can't be thinking about mitigation when they can't even get the basic needs that they have now, that they need now.
Yeah. How do you think people can, like, create climate resilience?
Well, actually, for me, it starts with local action. It's something that has to start locally. So it's something that you have to believe in yourself, that you feel you can make change. And like all of us say, the big ideas are there, but it actually comes with action, with a very, you know, what we call local action, something that you feel you can actually make some change with, that will then be in a position to be able to, what we call it, amplified and hopefully to be able to scaled up. And this is where the business side comes in, because at the end, lots of people have brilliant ideas. And you need to have some leadership quality, people matching leadership with great ideas, and then you get the funding. This is where young people can really be in a position to have those skills, and they do. It's a question of being able to get people to understand that this youth agenda is very important now, because I think we want to think about, yes, the future, which is what we're doing, but we also need to address their needs now. Because there are needs now, as you said, you're worried about this and concerned about, and that's the problem. Because the numbers aren't going to decrease in terms of youth. The youth bulge is just going to increase more. It's not going to go down. And so we need to be aware of that.
I feel like the way you're describing it is kind of like a bottom-up approach. But sometimes it feels like when there's no people that are actually in power that are listening, but you're still trying to make a change, it can be really difficult. I mean, I'm coming from a little bit of a pessimistic view, but I do think a lot of people my age kind of feel that, is that we feel like there have been people in power that haven't done well enough. For example, with climate change, it's a long-term problem. It's not something that can be fixed straight away. So you'll have different governments that keep changing constantly their policies. And so it's like, how can we make sure that we're getting on the right track and progressing towards a more sustainable future when those in power aren't necessarily constantly having that intention behind them, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think this is where being able to present this information to corporations, businesses, governments, and foundations, they need to be joined up on this discussion. You can't have corporations thinking this way and then governments having another view. And if they've all got different ideas about what they think, it's not going to work. And this is why the young people have to pitch their ideas to everybody in a way that they will be able to understand, yes, this is the way that we do believe that the young people have got solutions. They do know how to take action.
Yeah.
And that takes, obviously, it's a matter of us being able to feel that we can talk to all different groups, not just to one group or the other, or just, that's the problem, that when they're not speaking to each other, that's also part of the problem, and we need to bring them together. So a lot of it is about how to get the different people that we meet, whether you're in business, whether you're in government, to be able to say, hey, you know, you have to listen to the young people now. You have to get us to sit in the table. because now we need them. We need youth to lead and we need youth to participate. The young people have to stand up and actually really address this issue of participation. And we also have to promote more gender equality.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to leave women and girls behind. We want them to also be sitting the table. And often that's another area that I feel too, being aware of the gender inequality, even at that area of the sustainable business. So we've got that side to also be able to represent, you know, that women and girls in particular, this age group, they also have got amazing ideas on sustainability. And they also have got the power to be able to transform their world too. And this is why we need them to be able to amplify their voices. And it's not just bottom up, we also need top down. So we need the youth to participate at those, what we call government elite level. So whenever there's governments holding meetings, it's important that they also invite youth.
On the topic of youth leadership, there's another challenge to watch out for, SCG washing. Research by Orbieta et al. In 2021 shows that SCG washing is a prevalent problem worldwide, with companies often using the SCGs for impression management rather than genuine efforts.
I am a bit curious about your perspective on it, especially because you're an SCG advocate, about how to hold businesses actually accountable when they do SCG washing.
I'm not really sure how we can tackle that issue. It's a really difficult one now, because I think much of the information's on SDGs is basing itself on people's ability to, because as you know, this is a commitment that all governments made, but basically governments and businesses and individuals are really left to self-regulate themselves on how they're actually showing how they could implement and advance the SDGs. And because it's dependent on people providing the information themselves, it's very hard for people to be in a position to really truly see how accountable and transparent they are in being able to say what they're doing. And that's, I think, one of the difficulties with businesses, because obviously all businesses want to be able to show that they're achieving the SDGs. But in many cases, it's normal for many of us. We know that there's a lot of SDG washing as well as the green washing that you mentioned before. And I think it's one of the weakest areas. Just like I mentioned to you, the information that we get with all our database research at IEP on negative piece and positive piece,
mm-hmm.
One of the pillars that has the most effect on the peacefulness of a country, we found over many years, would you believe, is the pillar low level of corruption.
Yeah.
It actually has a huge effect on performance of a country in relation to their peacefulness. Now, if you think about that, and you think, you know, particularly countries and their governments with that low level of corruption, it seems to be one of the ones where many countries don't do well at all. And because it affects the peacefulness, you'd be trying to think, well, why aren't people focusing on that? Well, actually, even in the SDGs 17 Sustainable Development Goals, as you know, there are 169 targets. Out of 169, there's only one target that deals with corruption. And it's in SDG 16, is peace, peaceful, inclusive societies with access to justice for all, and transparent and accountable institutions at all levels. That's the corruption side. Now you can see why, and there's only one target out of the whole 169 17 goals focuses on corruption. So what does that tell you? It doesn't leave a lot of opportunity for people to really see if there is corruption and there's all sorts of not transparent, honest, accountable work being happening. So you can see that that could probably be one of the weaknesses in terms of why we're not able to really see the possibilities of how organisations are really being able to show that they are achieving the goals when you only have one target out of all those 17 goals that actually looks at this issue.
Yes.
But it makes then more the importance why we have to look at SDG 16 and the peace goal. And no surprises to you, you probably know in the latest SDG 2024 report, the goal that is the weakest of all goals in terms of reporting is SDG 16. And the second goal is SDG 5, which is gender equality, which again, probably for a lot of people, no surprises. Now you see the connection there with gender equality and 16.
Yeah, and peace, yeah. No, it's because like even with SDG washing, it happens in countries that have technically low levels of corruption. But because there's no like mechanisms in place to hold companies accountable, like there's no consequences for SDG washing at the moment, they can do whatever they want. And it's up to the individual to find out. And so I was thinking also in terms of like finding ways to hold companies accountable, are there any mechanisms that can actually be put in place? Because this SDG washing happening at a pretty disgusting scale, to be honest.
Yes, yes. But there is work being done, Hannah, on this with the SDSN, you know, you probably know Sustainable Development Goals Solutions Network, which is the research training, what do you call it, organisations around the world that are focused 100% on SDGs. And there's also a youth SDSN network, and they are specifically youth focusing on SDGs, and they will be looking at this issue. So this is, again, is this importance about partnerships. We can't do anything on our own. We have to constantly be able to seek trusted relationships, build networks and coalitions in the work we're doing, and not to feel at all despondent all the time, because that's the feeling I know that people are feeling, that young people are feeling, as if like everything's just, you know, doom and gloom. We do not want to have that as the, you know, the picture of scenario. We know that we're not achieving the SDGs. We know that we're going back. But if anything, I think, Hannah, our job is to restore trust and hope back. We're wanting to have the youth to believe that people have trust and hope that they will be able to contribute to the world. It's not about saying, oh, you know, put up my hands, I can't do anything. No, 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 no. We do believe that they are going to be the ones who are going to inherit the future. That's what Gandhi said. He said that, you know, the world and the land and the air, that's why we have to take care of the air, the sea, the water, just as much as we have to take of ourselves, because he said we didn't inherit it from our forefathers. We actually are borrowing it from the next generation. And just like you get a loan from a bank, you have to pay it back with interest. So we've got to take care of it and make sure we leave it even better than when we left it. So isn't that great? That's a wonderful thing to say to people.
That's what we need at the moment, because I think from what I'm understanding from this whole like conversation is that a lot of it comes down to just communication and collaboration and finding commonality between people from like diverse backgrounds. I think there's a lack in when we're talking about sustainable business, there's a lack of thinking about peace and peace building and how your skills that you learned from peace building, they must be, those skills are probably so relevant for the work that we need in sustainability. And so I think it's really interesting to have that kind of intersection perspective on it, which you provide, because for me personally, it's not something we just in sustainable business, it is a bit like carbon offsets and, you know, green economy and all these economical terms. But where peace comes in and where what we can learn from that, it's so crucial in what we take with us when we go into the workforce.
It's great. Well, I think the point is that, Hannah, now that you can see that interrelationship, bring that conversation in and introduce that language when you're talking. As you said, it's not just about talking about, you know, carbon offsets and introduce that. And then people will start to think, oh, didn't think of that that way. Oh, yes, I can see why that's it. And you're introducing it, you're raising people's awareness and greater understanding of what we mean by sustainability.
So this is the final question, and is what makes you feel positive about the future in sustainability?
Well, I feel positive because we have young people like you and what I call Generation Greta, who are going to be, I think, absolutely, you know, inspiring and I think world leaders in being able to, I think, see that we do need to transform our world. It's no longer business as usual. It's so important. It's no longer business. This is no longer about business as usual. We need an approach that has to be involve the youth, because we believe that the youth are going to be, for us, even in terms of size of population, going to be necessary for us to be able to have a better future. And if we don't have them sitting sitting next to us, making decisions together with us, we won't be able to transform our world to a sustainable, peaceful future.
Anna, that was absolutely fascinating. Thank you very much for a really thoughtful interview with a very special woman. And so I gained a lot from that. How do you think that the interview will inform your practice going forward?
I think for me personally, when I thought about sustainability, especially because I'm doing sustainability in a very like Western context, I did find that there was a bit lack of talking about peace and the role of peace in having to create more sustainable societies, obviously. Because like she does mention in the podcast that we actually have to address people's needs in all like people in conflict, people in developing countries as well, and not just people in developed countries. And I do find that when there is a lot about sustainability, obviously doing it in New Zealand in a developed country, it is about the context of the country you're in. But to acknowledge the fact that we also have to like not just like head off without any other countries following, you know, I think that's probably what I'm going to take from it. And just acknowledging that we have to like really focus as well on the peace building aspect of sustainability. It's not just about business operations and, you know, reducing emissions. It's actually about making sure that everyone can live a decent life. And I think that is what I'm going to take with me moving forward.
I think the takeaway for me is thinking about sustainability not just being a first world problem, and that we can't just define it in ways that only works in the West, in the global North. I really liked how she equated sustainable, the goal 16, the level of corruption, with peace. It's got me looking not at the global South, but at this developed country and how close we skirt to that corruption and how easily things could turn sour.
Yeah, I find it pretty alarming. I guess that's also one of the things that I really want to like ask her about, because I do feel through our degree we have seen examples of SDG washing within New Zealand. And so I do know that it happens in, you know, peaceful countries, very peaceful countries. But when do we put our foot down and say this is actually like, you know, not okay? And we need to like start rethinking about the consequences of doing that. I do think the whole part of the corruption also then got me thinking about like misinformation, because I think with SDG washing, it is a lot about misinformation as well. And we're misleading a lot of people on what's actually happening around us. And so, yeah, it's all a bit scary, to be honest. I find it very concerning that I just wonder if we actually have like, even though we have low levels of corruption, the fact that there is just like probably so much corruption going on in this space and no one's really like fully talking about it, I find that really concerning. So I am definitely going to keep my eyes out for that moving forward 100%. And I am going to live by not working for a company if I in any capacity am part of an SDG washing thing or a greenwashing thing or blue washing or whatever that is, I will not be working for that company. That's kind of like my boundary, I think, moving forward.
How do we get this upcoming generation of workforce to think that way, to realize their power to create change just by their willingness to walk away? How do we inspire that?
I mean, you need to change the way you view things, right? You need to change. It's not about earning the most money. Like money, I think one of the biggest myths ever is like, money makes you happy. Yeah. And so I think a part of that is actually just acknowledging the fact that I think, you know, I don't want to like go into this space. Like, I know there's a lot of money in sustainability, and I know a lot of people go into it for the wrong reasons. And I have talked to people within this space that have said that. But I think for me personally, it's not about the money. And that in itself makes it so much easier to leave a project. You know, because I think the money thing does actually influence people into positions where they don't do things that are good for the people and the planet, you know. And so taking that factor away, I will assume that that will reduce the likelihood of you participating in like SDG washing and green and blue washing. If you just change the way you view success, I think that's the main takeaway.
On the with the idea of, you know, what does your professional practice space look like going forward? If I was the job fairy and I could wave my magic wand and put you in your perfect job, what is it?
I would really like to work in an NGO again. I thought working for IEP was so fun. Like, I loved it because it's so, like, you just see the practical implications of what you're doing. It's so clear. Everything you do at that think tank, it's very, you just see straight away, this is what it's going to lead to, and this is the impact it's going to have on communities. And for me, that's what I care about. Like, I volunteered for like 6 years in my community. I never got paid. I actually, like, my thesis is the first time I'm getting paid for anything. And so I've always just loved just volunteering and making sure that, like, I get to, like, meet lots of cool people and, like, have an impact on my community. And so I think with that thinking, it's just very natural for me to go into a space where it is a bit more like nonprofit work. And so that's what I ideally hope to do in the future. That's like my dream job, is like non-for-profit sustainability work. Yeah.
What's your thesis about?
So I am working with the McDermott Institute, which is up in Wellington. And so I'm going to help them create like a resource toolkit for like deep tech entrepreneurs that work with them, to just like give them the right like access to information that need to make their operations more sustainable. Yeah, so it's really cool. I feel like I'm being part of like a green transition and like doing like actual like action research, which is what I really love. So as long as I can see the results of what I'm doing and it will have an impact, I am willing to put in so much work into that. So I am very excited. So that's what I'm going to be doing.
Is there a PhD going to come, do you think, after you've finished your master's?
I am not sure yet. I don't think straight away. I think I need a break. I have been studying nonstop for 19 years and I think I need a break. I am a bit burnt out. I think I definitely see it as something that might come up in the future. Again, if it's based in actionable like change, 100%, I think it will be something I might do. But I think I need a couple of years of just, you know, working a bit, actually earning money a bit. That would be nice. Yeah.
Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
I mean, the most basic one is like, I guess like stuff that can last a long while, but is also beneficial for people and the planet. I think my basic definition of sustainability. Yeah.
I'm always taken by the idea that you can't have a little bit of ethics. You're either ethical or not. You can't say I'm going to be ethical except on Fridays. If yeah. if you say that, then you're not ethical. But we seem to let people away with being a bit sustainable.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I find it, yeah, I think we've reached a point, and I think that comes through in that interview with Patricia, is that we've reached a point where we kind of need to wake up and we can't just do things half-heartedly. And I'm kind of a bit tired of that happening. And I'm seeing that on all kinds of levels. I think it's time that we need to just, and I mean, this has been like taught, even when I was in like primary school, we were like, oh, alarm, wake up, like there's a problem going on, and no one did anything. And so I think that we just have to start like actually being sustainable all days of the week and being aware of what we're doing much more. And maybe it's annoying to begin with because it's not our like daily normal way of living. But I think if we are able to do this and change the way we live our day by day, I think eventually it will become the norm. So you just have to start with yourself. Again, that bottom-up approach is what I feel is really important now, because I do feel like no one's really listening or caring as much as I want them to from higher up and people in power. So, yeah.
The other thing I liked about your conversation with Patricia is that it started out touching on the worst things that can happen, people growing up in conflict. But then It quite quickly turned into hope. It was like, what is she doing to give those young people hope? And it's about, you know, entrepreneurial, blue economy and so on. Are you a hopeful person?
I think when I think I used to be really, really pessimistic. And then I did my internship and I got to be around someone like Patricia, who has seen so many awful things. Like, she has just done a lot of field work that's insane, and it's had such a huge impact. And she's done that her whole life, dedicated to volunteering within her communities and communities abroad that are people in need. And seeing that she is, like, genuinely the sweetest person I've ever met, so down to earth, just, I cannot praise her more, like, so kind. And seeing that she's still optimistic, she's still holding on, like, and she's been doing this for, like, so many years. I think that was the real switch for me. I was like, wow, okay. And, like, I feel as well that she really acknowledged me and, like, the potential I have. And she's the first, like, cool person that I think has ever, like, done that. And that made me change my whole attitude, I think. So that was great, because then I went into this degree with a much more positive outlook. And so I feel like that she was just a huge impact on my life. And I'm really grateful for knowing her. And I still, like, keep contact, because I'm, yeah, she's just the best. So, yeah.
I have some questions to end the show and close to negative time, so we're going to have to wriggle and I'll edit them on the fly. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Maybe this thesis, I think. It's pretty cool. Like a scholarship, yeah.
What's your superpower?
I think I have a lot of empathy for people, and I think that's really important when you work in this kind of space.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
I would say so now, yeah. I definitely would say so, yeah.
If you could wave a magic wand and have a miracle occur tomorrow morning, what would you have happen?
I would like all the billionaires to invest all their money into sustainable things. Yeah.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
I think just people. Yeah, like cool people I meet, like random people on the street or whatever, like, and I have cool interactions, like you guys as well, yeah.
What's the biggest challenge you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
Oh, I think just working in this space is a challenge, to be honest. Yeah, I might have to convince a lot of people to do things they don't really want to do. So that will probably be a challenge.
And do you have any advice for our listeners?
Go out, volunteer. Like, it looks great on your resume. You get to meet a lot of people and somehow opportunities just come from it. Like, I'm so lucky that I've had all these opportunities, but I wouldn't have had that if I didn't volunteer and I didn't take that extra bit of, like, effort outside of my uni work. So get out into your community and just have an impact.
Thank you for that. Dr. Karatai.
Hannah, I have so enjoyed sharing a teaching and learning space with you. You have got a huge amount of knowledge that has come from some cool experiences, some amazing places where you've been, and the way that you share that with people around you is really beautiful. I found you to be a very open and deep thinking and caring member of our little group, of our little learning group. And you have really just added some real joy to what is at times a complex space as we start digging into those scary things for the future. So I wish you all the best for your future, and I hope that you can inspire the billionaires to dip into their pockets and put their money where it matters. Kia ora.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going out to Giant Panda Gorilla Dub Squad. That's a real name. Whatever cost. You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. Mawira Karatai in Whakatani introduced Hannah Renman with her episode of Coming Up for Air. I'm Sam Moran. We hope you enjoyed the show. Whatever cause.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.